Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
Australian Lab Rat is an alternative rock grunge artist. He released his debut album In the Walls We Wait in May of 2025 via Mushroom Pillow. He has had numerous critically acclaimed singles, namely Lost in Soho, Drunk, Exit Path, and Rolling Loud. In 2025, Lab Rat performed at his very first UK shows at the Great Escape Festival. And his track Car Crash is featured in the forthcoming new Netflix series Olympo. In 2014, having reclaimed his life from the clutches of addiction, Lab Rat found himself at a crossroads. Fueled by the memory of his late brother and driven by an unyielding determination, he sought refuge in Singing Bird recording studios in Melbourne, determined to carve out a path in the music industry. Despite facing numerous hardships, including physical altercations on stage and bouts of hunger, Lab Rat persevered, finding solace in a community of kindred spirits who shared his vision. It was during this tumultuous journey that his path intersected with Mushroom Pillow, a European label renowned for its innovative approach to music. With the support of his friend and mentor coach, he forged a global presence in the music industry with Mushroom Pillow by his side. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Lab Rat. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
Right now, I'm currently in Western Australia. I'm in Perth and I'm doing pretty good. It's a nice hot day and yeah, can't complain, doing well.
How and where the choice of the stage name Lab Rat, how did that come to be?
Initially, it sparked, I think I was 15 or 16 at the time. And my actual last name is Leverett, and a friend just happened to be they were drinking, they'd had too much to drink, and they mispronounced my name, and they called me Lab Rat. And my friends around at the time thought it was the funniest thing ever, so the nickname kind of stuck. So when I started like doing the music and doing the band, it just felt like the perfect natural choice, I guess.
Okay, so now let's rewind to that time that you started doing the music. At what age, whether child or teenager, did you feel, say, okay, I want to be creating music? How did that journey progress?
I guess I would have been 8 years old, and my dad took me to my first show, which my uncle was a drummer in a band, and they were playing at a motorcycle club at a Bandito's clubhouse in Ballarat called the Triple X on Albert. And it was quite a wild place to be at 8 years old, but came in through the side and just saw my uncle playing drums and just thought he was the coolest man in the world. I just remember at 8 years old being like, that's what I want to do. I want to do what he's doing right now. So for my next birthday, my parents got me a drum kit. And so I think we set it up in the lounge room, and it was within a day it was moved to the shed because it was very loud. And then I think next year I was like, oh, I want to try guitar. And so it just kind of it spread from there to, by the time I think 14, I'm already playing drums in a couple of different rock bands in like the area that I was from. By the time I was, I think maybe 17, I'm now playing guitar and singing in certain bands. And by the time I was 21, I was like a fully fledged frontman and I was doing the Lab Rat thing, I suppose.
You mentioned that you're part of bands. How did that transition to becoming more solo?
I mean, I still have Lab Rat. We still have a bit, like, it's a band now. I mean, I'll write all the music. But when we're on stage, obviously there's, you know, Alpaca, Kaiser, and Mac. And they're like, when we're on stage, that is Lab Rat. Even in the writing process, even though I write all the songs, I then take them to those boys. And they'll be like, that's good, that's bad, that's not good. And then so we'll do stuff like that. So I was doing it, Lab Rat solo for about maybe, I think, 6 years. And then about 4 years ago, the band came into the fold. It initially started when I'd played in so many bands by the time I was, I think, 18, 19. I just wanted to try something different, and I wanted a little bit more creative control, or I wanted, I was sick of starting a band and then it ends, and then having to start another band and it ends. So I just thought, I'll take the reins and try and do it. And then after about 6 years of performing solo, I realized I missed it. I missed being in a band. So like that was when I organized the boys together, and that was all what started happening. But yeah, just that idea of always wanting to try something new or try something different. And then, you know, I'd start playing guitar because I couldn't find a guitarist for my band. And then I started singing because no one wanted to sing with me. And then I started rapping because I couldn't find a rapper. Like, it just kind of all folded out like that.
So basically now you're the core foundation, and you've got the boys who are sort of perform with you and sort of collaborate with you in the writing, correct?
Correct. Exactly right. The same way that, I guess you could say, like, not that I'm anywhere near the level of these artists, but like a David Bowie or a Marilyn Manson, like they might be an artist, but you know that the drummer is Ginger Fish, you know, John Five, you know, they all have those day one people that they still have around them.
Now, you referenced writing the songs. Tell us about their process.
Yeah, so it usually starts in the bedroom. Like I usually will lock myself away until a couple of songs come out, and it's a numbers game, honestly. Like I write 10 songs, 9 of them might be terrible, but 1 of them's amazing. And then so just keep going on like that. And so initially it usually starts with, I'll come up with a riff or some chords. I'll lay down maybe like a verse or a chorus over it. And then from there, that's where, you know, I'll take it to the boys, we'll have a listen to it. And then, you know, like Alpaca, the drummer, he'll like add his own fills. My guitarist, Kai, he'll do some harmonies in the chorus, you know, like that type of thing. And then, yeah, from there, it just kind of goes to a bigger studio, mix master, and that's kind of the whole bag.
Tell us about their latest album.
In the Walls We Wait. It's really exciting. It's our first album through the label Mushroom Pillow. So we're very excited to have this out. It's been great working with those guys. And yeah, I think it's 12 songs. And yeah, it took us about 2 years to write it. Or we'd written it about a year ago. We'd wrote it a while back. And then it was just about the marketing and the singles and slowly drip feeding it, that type of thing. So we've been with this album for a while. So we're very happy that it's out and people finally get to listen to it.
I like that you guys are doing or releasing an album. These days, it's very much people saying, oh, I'm only releasing EPs or singles because the album has sort of like disappeared, which I just strongly disagree about. So obviously, you in a certain way, you guys also disagree. What are your thoughts of the way people are thinking around albums versus singles these days?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm very much from like, I mean, I grew up listening to like older music, whether it was even classic rock from the 60s, the punk movement from the 70s, or even the grunge movement in the 90s. And in my opinion, there's nothing better than like a great album where, you know, that takes you on a journey, and whether it's a concept album or just great music. I love that. And it's, as you were saying, I started to notice that was kind of lacking. Like it's not really a thing anymore. So when me and the label first got together, I think we did have a conversation about, oh, maybe we should split it up into maybe a couple EPs or do this. But I was very adamant. I was like, it's an album. It's been written as an album. Here's the start. Here's the middle. So I appreciate and love bands that come from that world of, you know, you might drop an EP or a couple of things, but then you drop an album, and it wasn't this whole idea of, oh, we'll wait until it's the right time. No, you drop the album and make it the right time.
I love me a CD. I still budget for my CDs every month. For me, I love, as you mentioned, the beginning, the middle, the end, the unpacking, the booklet. I'm not sure if you're aware, massive comeback of physicals around the world. A couple of years ago in the UK, 5.9 million vinyls sold, the biggest since 1990. Last year in the UK, there's a basket of products that they gauge exchanges on. And obviously, there needs to be a large amount of exchanges every day for a product to be in this basket for tax purposes. Because of the upsurge of CDs again, CDs are now back in the basket. The research is showing that it's the younger kids, the teenagers that are diving into this world, not necessarily the older people. And then again, you mentioned dropping an album. We've got the streaming platforms. What are your observations of the landscape at the moment?
I'm split into two minds about this because obviously without, you know, saying too much, we all know that streaming sites don't pay well at all. And unfortunately, these days, not that I'm better than it, but there's a lot of, I call it microwave music. It's just quick, reheat it, like in and out, like that type of thing. However, I guess on the other side of the argument, I used to, when CD stores were still a thing, I used to go out every week and buy a couple new albums. And there's nothing more annoying than spending $20 on an album and there's two good songs. And you're like, what? And so you just have 14 bad songs. So I guess it's good in the sense that with streaming, you can check out an album. And then if you like it, you can go buy the vinyl or buy some merchandise or see a show. So it's got its benefits. But yeah, also obviously got a lot of problems with the landscape as well. But I guess it's just that thing where if you refuse to try and or to try and change with it, then you know you'll eventually get left behind, which is quite sad. But well, like what we're very grateful for is that a lot of our fans and the people that we work with all still buy vinyl. They still buy CDs, and it's more of a thing of if you hear it on streaming sites and you like it and you actually want to support it, then you'll go find it a different way.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
I've been playing music for at least over 10 years now. And there is no better drug or high than that feeling of when you play a great show and there's an energy between you and the crowd and that feedback, that's the best feeling in the world. Even if there's three people in the room, me and the boys, we still put on the same show, and you can still get that feeling even if there's like 300 people or three people. I've never done anything that's ever felt better than getting on stage and doing a great show. Like, are we chasing that high until I die? That'll be my thing.
I'm that person that is right up in front. I'm jamming, I'm dancing. I take my phone out for maybe a couple of songs, a couple of videos, and then I put it away. I notice these days a lot of people, for a lot of the time, are posting or tweeting or videoing. You referenced earlier the energy between yourself and the band and the audience. Do you not feel that phone situation takes away from that energy, a connection, or it's just where society is at this time?
Well, that's the thing. I think it's, as you great, I couldn't have said it better. It's where society is at this time. I guess we're lucky that a lot of our fans, they're like you. They might film like a quick 10 seconds, but there's never once I've looked out and thought, will you put your phones away? Like, I might see every now and then someone will have the phone up, but for the most part, like it's one or two people. And then by the next time I look up, their phones are down. So it's, like we're, I guess, very energy based. So people are usually having too much fun at our gigs to film and get their phones out. And yeah, it's cool. Like I appreciate it because you want to go away with something that you've kind of got from the show. And it's a great way to interact with fans. They'll send you that footage later and you get chatting and that type of thing. But I might do the same. Like if I go see, you know, Frank Carter or Fontaine's DC, I might snap a quick little photo, but then for the rest of it, I'll be screaming my lungs out.
Yeah.
So I understand both sides.
But I like what you said. You said your sentence was, our fans are having too much fun, so they're not taking their phones out. So it's interesting for me, that comment, because then those people who are consistently on their phones filming, does that mean they're not having fun and they have to find another avenue to outlet of? So that's an interesting debate and discussion.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I think it's like maybe they're focused on the wrong things. They're focusing on, oh, this is going to look great on social media, or, oh, I get to prove to people that I, oh, whatever it is.
Yeah,
like, you know, so, but I do understand you, like maybe I should say living in the moment rather than having too much fun, just being... Yeah. Direct vision.
Exactly. What's coming up over the next period of time?
So I guess in the next 3 to 6 months, I was just organizing with my drummer some studio time because we have got about 16 new songs that have all fully been written, and like we're about to get in and record the next album, which is very exciting. We just got back from like Europe and the UK not too long ago, played some festivals in London and Brighton. So we're honestly on a bit of a break for the next couple of weeks because we love each other like brothers, but if you spend too long in a van together, you need space. So the next thing will be recording the album. We've got a couple of shows later in a couple of months back in Melbourne. And then, just gearing up for the next release, really.
I love this game. I know if I had to ask you this question in 2 years, 5 minutes, 5 hours, I know your answer will be different every time simply because there are millions of them. I'm not saying favorites, as I said, top of mind. If you had to push play to five artists once we finish this conversation, and if you can think of specific songs from those artists, then those songs, or who would those artists be?
That's a good one. I like that. Because I was listening to them this morning, but the song Kool-Aid by Bring Me the Horizon, that'd be one song. I love that post-gen album, I think it's called. It's like a great mash of, I guess, electronic production and heavy metal music. Like, I think it's a great, great blend. The first album, I think it's called Blossom, the first album by Frank Carter and the Rattlesnakes. I think that's a fantastic album. Starburster by Fontaines DC. For about a year, I've been nonstop playing that song. I think that band is fantastic. Hood, H-O-O-D by Kneecap. I think like they're an Irish like sort of post-punk rap group. That's four, I think. And then fifth, I Play Around My Neck by Lab Rat, a song off our latest album.
So you referenced that you were around playing with the guys and, you know, you needed your space. Mm. When you guys are collaborating and, you know, we've all got ego, naturally. Mm. How do you, from your experience, separate ego to get the job done compared to something might have irritated you from one of them? And it's basically just your ego playing up. How do you pull yourself out of the situation to say, okay, well, this is just ego. Let's just move forward with the job.
Yeah, I think what helps is that before they were in the band, me and the drummer made music videos together. We used to always collaborate on that. Me and the guitarist used to play together in another band. So we've had a long relationship and through that we've learned to kind of understand where each other's coming from. And I'll definitely say that I by far have the biggest ego out of the whole band. I'm very, very lucky and grateful that the same way I would be for them, we're very happy to check each other and keep it in check. Like, you know, there's been times where, you know, we have to pull each other up and be like, mate, think like, you know, what do you, and it's like, yeah, fair enough. I shouldn't, we're very quick to apologize and collaborate more in a personal sense, even than a musical sense. There's been things that we've done over the past 6 months that I didn't agree with, but I still treat it as a very democratic kind of band. I feel like it. I call it the most democratic dictatorship there is. Like there's songs on the album that I personally like, not the one we just recorded, but the one we're recording now. And there's songs that I don't think should be on there, but the other three guys strongly think that they should. So I have to swallow my ego and be like, all right, it's going on the album then, like things like that. And so as much as we all believe in ourselves, I think we believe in each other collectively, so we're happy to, you know, squash the ego for the betterment of the music or the band and that type of thing.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
I'd like to thank anyone who's listening right now, because it's still crazy that people would like to hear what I have to say. I'm still getting used to that. And I do talk quite a lot of shit, so I apologize. But I just like to say, be kind to each other. What you see on the internet isn't real. So social media doesn't matter. And spend time with the ones you love and spend time listening to Lab Rat.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at CelebSavant. That's CelebSavant.